Well, Christine is very gracious. She thinks I've got all the answers, but not sure we're quite there yet. But in any case, I'm delighted to sort of continue the story here about these, exactly what you're talking about, John, these recurring outbreaks of Salmonella Newport, this O61 pattern that we've seen now for 12 years. And I just want to say that for time's sake, that I'm up here, but both David Blythe and Cliff Mitchell from Department of Health in Maryland are here, and we're doing this together. And when the questions get really tough, I'm just going to turf it back to Maryland. So just to try to put where we thought we were prior to last summer's outbreak, which up until that time, as Christina pointed out, this had been a problem that had been pretty much limited to outbreaks associated with tomatoes. And just to give you an idea as to produce and its significant economic implications is that it is the fourth most popular vegetable consumed by Americans. And that although California and Florida are the top two producing states, Virginia does rank third as far as tomato producing states. And again, when you understand what Delmarva is, it wasn't just Maryland, it was Delaware and Virginia. And again, up until last summer's outbreak, we had somehow thought that the problem was somewhat confined to Virginia. So here's the slide that Christina showed, but at least you haven't seen it 10 times today, I don't think. But it really goes back to show this now 12-year history of these so-called Delmarva outbreaks, Salmonella and Newport, this O61 pattern that is rather unique. And again, most of them had been associated with this red round tomato. And so the 2014 investigation was different, not only in that we found a produce item other than tomatoes, which was, i.e., the cucumbers, that was associated with illness, but we also found a different state. Maryland was warmly welcomed into the Delmarva-associated outbreak family. But I do want to emphasize that the whole genome sequencing data, the traceback itself, didn't all go back to cucumbers. And in fact, when we had an industry consultation, we were kind of told by that group that, you know, it may certainly be plausible that you've got produce items other than, you know, that you may have multiple produce items associated with illness. And I think that would really make sense if we're really kind of dealing with a contaminated environment. I don't think there's any reason to believe that one particular produce item could explain all the illness that we've seen. So just to give you a little bit of history as to where FDA has been involved, if some of you who may not go back long enough in history, I guess some of us give away our age, and we do recall the first tomato outbreak that was reported in 1993, but we didn't see the first tomato outbreak from Virginia reported until almost 10 years later in 2002. FDA has got an active research center based at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, and they were engaged in looking at this scenario really beginning in 2010, but becoming very actively engaged in 2009 with a surveillance system that was looking at soil, water. Somebody asked a question about water a few minutes ago, and they have collected over 30,000 samples. Over those, that 2009-2012 time period. And in that time period, they actually never found, as Christina said, a positive product. We've never seen it in a tomato. But FDA did find multiple positive O61 pattern in both the soil sediment, this pond sediment, and clearly it is there in the environment. But no easy answers as to how it gets into the environment, because again, Christina emphasized the point that it has not been found in the world of poultry, and you know, our colleagues at USDA may wish to comment further, but her point about, I think, the beef versus chicken is certainly interesting. So one of the problems, of course, in investigating these fresh produce outbreaks is that, as you saw with the map, with the O61 pattern, you know, multiple states involved. Some states may have very small numbers of cases and may not have adequate public health resources to go off and do the epi investigation of some of those cases that are occurring. Having once been a state epidemiologist, I certainly understand the problems with adequate resources to undertake some of these resource-intensive investigations. But just to say that some of these cases in areas perhaps outside of Maryland or Virginia, maybe small numbers, but if you can get really good epi data that may go back to a particular product, especially if that epi data can help elucidate a good trace back, it helps all of us together to try to come back with a better understanding, a better picture of what may be going on out there in that world. We know that the attack rate, of course, is never 100% with any outbreak investigation, and certainly when we're thinking about intermittent contamination of produce, you could certainly have low attack rates, which again may not lead you to having a really good picture as to what's going on. And one of the most frustrating aspects of the produce-related outbreaks is that by the time we get through these investigations, that field is no longer available. It's long been plowed under. And although Maryland did their best to try to conduct this investigation, by the time they got there at the end of October to this particular farm, there really wasn't much to look at. Actually, I tend to skip ahead of myself here, which is what I do, but this just sort of, again, outlines really what FDA's research efforts have been to try to identify what might be really going on in this area. And to date, it had actually only been conducted in the Virginia area, but at this point, we're working with Maryland and Delaware to see if some of that extensive environmental work can be expanded outward. So next steps in all of this, because none of us want to see these ongoing, annual or biannual or whatever they might be, outbreaks occurring, we all care much more about prevention than running after the outbreaks themselves, and certainly that's what we all are going after working together. I know that Cliff Mitchell had worked, I believe, with Matt Weiss to talk about a proactive surveillance effort for the state so that if we see this pattern of 061 occurring this coming season, that we can be actively engaged with a standardized questionnaire that might be helpful here in moving forward to rapidly get a handle on what is going on. Because, again, if we have the epidemiology, it better informs FDA's traceback efforts. Allison did a really nice job with her C investigation of trying to present a very, very complex traceback diagram in one picture, in a few words, and I never really appreciated the full significance of the work that goes into these traceback investigations until I really got to FDA, but just imagine a 10,000-piece jigsaw puzzle that you're trying to put all the pieces together to make some degree of sense, but you don't even begin to get some of those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle until you get this epidemiologic data that can inform that traceback investigation. Traceback investigations are so incredibly time-intensive, labor-intensive. Getting all these documents, whether it's the bills of lading or invoices, shipping records, and if we don't have those, as a regulatory agency where we are an agency with lots of lawyers running around, we are not able to take regulatory action. But even more important, if we can't get a good handle on traceback to a particular firm or farm or processing facility or whatever it is we're trying to look at, we're not in a position to try to do more of a root cause analysis. What's going on here? What went wrong? What is it we have to put in place to prevent these from becoming a bigger problem in the future? So where we are currently, and this is where I invite David and Cliff perhaps to offer a few comments, but where we have worked together with the ag commissioners from the three states, Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia, to talk about where we need to go forward. Clearly it's a sensitive issue. We don't want to start perhaps condemning poultry if that's really not the problem. We really do need a science-based approach, and that's where we're all working together. But nonetheless, we need better information as to what's going on here, and of course it is going to be a collaborative approach to move forward to prevent the outbreak of, I don't know if we'll be in a position to prevent the outbreak of 2015, but we certainly want to adopt a more informed process as we move forward with this. You asked about industry, and unlike, let's say, California, where We have large industry conglomerates, Dole, you know, Fresh Express, Taylor Farms. The Delmarva is many, many small producers, so we don't have, you know, that large industrial presence. But nevertheless, no produce, you know, industry partner here wants to see an outbreak linked with cucumbers, tomatoes, or anything else, because if the consumer hears there's a problem with spinach or whatever that problem might be, it hurts sales nationally. So we will be engaged with industry. We first want to ensure that the three states have come together and have met and discussed where they want to go, but certainly the cooperative extension services are where we think is going to be a really good partner here in trying to promote, you know, ensure that there's good agricultural practices. But if we are able to trace back to specific farms or even processing facilities, and we identify, the question is asked about water, you know, is it the surface water that's used versus, you know, a drilled well water? I mean, those are going to be the sorts of answers that we're seeking in order to best inform where we go in the future. So Clifford, David, do you want to offer comments?
So I'm Clifford Mitchell. I want to be very careful. I'm the environmental health side of the story, and David is the infectious disease side of the story. A lot of this comes from our work with the rapid response teams, where we've got the labs, the infectious disease folks, and environmental health working together. And I think, as Kathy said, the three states have already met with CDC and FDA. We are continuing to meet, and I will share, just to sort of build on what you said, we want to be sure that the science and the evidence are there to be able to make recommendations. A lot of these farms already use good agricultural practices. The Department of Ag works very closely with the farms, and they've done a lot of training out there. So the question is, if GAP is not sufficient, then is there something else that goes beyond GAP, and what would that recommendation be? And so I think that there's a lot of question at this point, but we, at the end of the day, want to be sure that, A, we're in a position to respond rapidly if there are additional cases, and B, in terms of making recommendations, that we want the recommendations to be based on good science and good evidence. David?
I don't really have much more to add. I appreciate that latter comment especially, and we will work as we have done in the past and look forward to doing in the future with collaboratively with our neighboring jurisdictions, states, and local jurisdictions, and then also the CDC on really trying to get quickly get identification of at least some of Newport CD1 cases and trying to particularly identify subclusters where those exist, because I think those are from the previous presentation. You see how key those are to really to these kinds of traceback investigations. So working collaboratively on that front, but really the key is to figuring out what's going on from the environmental and production side to prevent these from happening.
Sounds good.
Other
so
questions?
Yeah.
June from Oregon. I just wondered, you mentioned this pattern 61. Is that like always associated with the Delmarva Peninsula produce, or like is that, or is it a common pattern nationally? Like I didn't know that I should be asking salmonella cases about either.
Yeah, my understanding is this is a unique pattern that has been associated with cases associated with Delmarva. Christina,
yeah,
Matt.
So it's been on the eastern seaboard, and most of the cases historically that have been in the West have been
So if you saw this pattern, would you immediately start thinking of the peninsula?
You should probably ask
about travel history.
Especially
here in Oregon. Andy Newman, New York State Department of Health. So I was looking at your slides, and you had on one slide the word traceback and proactive, and my mind kind of went scrambling. I'm thinking, well, you know, what could be more proactive? Is there a way to actually, and there may be a whole host of reasons legally why you can't do this, but to do some sort of, say, retail sampling or something like that, that might get you a positive product that you might be able to really trace back to a particular farm and maybe get better data. Now, I was just bouncing that off Catherine in the back, and, you know, it could be a huge undertaking or such a random undertaking that it's just not worth doing, but I just wonder about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and you may know that Ernie Julian there in Rhode Island is very, very concerned about this and has actually reached out to other states and Canada, I believe, to start a proactive produce sampling campaign. As you heard both Christine and myself comment, out of these many years of all these samples, we've never had a single positive product. And as you may know, for many of you who have done produce-related outbreak investigations, even when you know you've got that product in your hand, it's unlikely many times to find a positive product. That's number one. Number two, one of the problems with produce-related outbreaks is the amount of commingling that goes on. I mean, if anybody can figure out that they really have a Delmarva-associated tomato in their hand when they go to the supermarket, more power to them. But it is really challenging, and I think that could be certainly a problem with this proactive. I mean, you know, positive if it's positive, it's great, but negative if it's negative, to me, doesn't prove anything.
Well, and I realize it's probably pie in the sky, but just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
I've got a really quick question. It was Brandon Jackson from CDC. I'm just curious if you know at the top of your head, either one of you, the resistance pattern, the microbial resistance pattern for these. Just because I typically Newport outbreaks that tend to be associated with beef have been multi-drug resistant, and ones associated with produce have not been. So I think they're like, might help get the reservoir issue.
So they have three isolates that were tested, and all were pan-susceptible to all antibiotics.
But nonetheless, there was a pretty good hospitalization rate, which is something that obviously you think about with this particular organism.
So I was kind of maybe, can I take 1 minute and just say like a little of the discussion?
Yeah, go for it.
Besides, so I guess I would say there's like a lot of balls in the air around this this coming year. A lot of people I think are really interested, and I think everybody's probably tired of having the same outbreak over and over again. And so I can't speak to like every single activity that's going on, but what I can say from CDC at least is sort of what some of the discussions around the epi side have been. And so since all of you guys are probably going to get an email from us about this very shortly, I can give you a brief plug of what's going on. So basically, our colleagues in the Delmarva states for quite some time have already been doing, every year when they see a pattern 61, they're sort of hitting it with a supplemental questionnaire already. And so what we're thinking we want to do this year is basically scale up that activity across the entire Eastern Seaboard. So everybody who is willing to sort of work with us and wants to interview right away pattern 61 illnesses with a supplemental form that focuses on produce items that are going to Delmarva, we're working on building up the data collection forms that have already been in use in Virginia and Maryland and Delaware. So we're hoping to basically schedule weekly conference calls, whether there is an outbreak or not, every single week to go over the epi data. Our laboratory, and they're going to work with some of the state laboratories to try and do whole genome sequencing for all pattern 61 Newport isolates from at least 10 states on the Eastern Seaboard. In addition, some states may be sequencing, they may be working with states or at CDC sequencing all Newport isolates. So basically, again, this is all in the pursuit of trying to rapidly identify subclusters early enough for the regulatory partners to get back to a farm while the farm is still in production. So basically, expect to sort of hear from us and essentially build on sort of like all the really good work that's been going on, and we're hoping that we can scale it up and pull in, you know, 8 or 10 more states to really, you know, hit the epi data hard, hit the sequencing stuff really hard, and get that sequencing information, you know, while we're still in the midst of the investigation. So we hope that'll give us a leg up on some of the tracebacks. So just to say, stay tuned. You'll probably be hearing from us a lot this summer about it.
Well, I appreciate the commercial, Matt. That's good. I do want to remind everybody that, you know, everybody is getting very, very excited about whole genome sequencing. And in fact, I've even heard some people say, well, we don't need epidemiologists anymore because we've got whole genome sequencing. But I would still argue that we do need the epi data yet. And Matt, am I correct that if there's a state that might have multiple other outbreaks going on, that they would probably be able to use an epi 8 or something from CDC to help with some of the interviewing with that standardized questionnaire should they need it?
We're always willing to help if you would like it.
One last question.
Sorry. I'm John Keogh from Water Warren CDC. This is a really interesting ongoing outbreak, decades-long situation, and it's really interesting if we don't know the environmental reservoir. Obviously, I think about water, I think about other things, and it stretches my mind to think how difficult it would be to try and work on any of that to figure out where this might be coming from. But I don't know, if you reached out to any academic partners, any of the universities in the area that might have an environmental sampling program any other federal partners like USGS or EPA that might already have some sampling data for water or in the environment to see if there's any. They may obviously not doing sequencing to get to pathogen 61, but they may be doing some other pathogen sampling where you might be get some clues about where this might
So, good question. And in the initial meeting that we had with the Ag Commissioners back in early April, actually academia was well represented from Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. So they have been working on this as well. Again, no answers as yet, but very engaged and part of this partnership. EPA, we're actually going to be reaching out to partly because some of the proposed rules under the Food Safety Modernization Act actually are in conflict with what EPA says you can do to treat surface water. So we need to resolve that aspect of these rules that are yet to come out. So there's much to be done yet, but that partnership is needed, so thanks.
We're certainly be interested to see what happens this summer. And join me to thank all of our presenters today.